Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Columbus City Council last night approved a plan, a campaign contribution limit of more than $12,700 per individual and group donors. The amount is high, far higher than any other Ohio City donor limit, and it is a bone of contention for Common Cause of Ohio. We'll hear from them and Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Michael Stinziano later on in the program. WOSU reporter Nick Evans has been covering the issue. He joins us. Welcome back.
Hey, anytime.
The timeline for the legislation, why did it need to be passed?
Well, they wanted to get it done now so that it could be in effect for this year's municipal elections. As much as this might feel quick, you know, this has stretched out a little bit. You know, they were originally planning to pass this back in December, the same time
right.
we did
it's almost as soon as it was introduced.
Yeah. Very, very quick back then. But then they pushed pause, had a public hearing, heard a lot of pushback at that public hearing, specifically tied to the idea of the contribution limit. But, you know, they went back among the council members, talked about it, and they decided they liked what they had and they moved forward with it.
They didn't make any changes.
I can't recall the specific changes they made, but at the public hearing, they introduced a series of amendments. They were not major changes. Mm-hmm. They didn't address the significant contention among critics related to the campaign contribution limit that stayed as it was.
What kind of campaign finance regulations had there been for the city?
None.
Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
This is their first stab at it.
This is the first stab at it.
Why now?
That's a good question. I think that there is a growing sense, especially at the federal level, the place where most people sort of pay attention to politics, that there is a problem with dark money. Right. And so I think that this is probably if I'm being cynical, it's an easy way for city leaders to score points. If I'm being supportive, it's an easy way for them to take a step now while they have control to put in place regulations that will be in effect for the foreseeable future that could have really positive impacts on local elections. The thing that, you know, especially supporters of the measure and even some critics point to is disclosure requirements. You know, that is a major thing. They've taken steps to make sure that this is easier to search and get through the.
Yeah, because before you had to ask the candidates, there was no public disclosure, routine disclosure, or was there?
I'm still pretty new to town, so I can't say, you know, what the course of events was like, you know, 5, even 10 years ago. But I know that for campaign contributions right now, you can go to the Franklin County Board of Elections and find them, but they're not machine readable. It's basically a sheet of paper that's been scanned in. And so, you know, some of them are very legible. Some of them are less so.
Uh-huh.
The city has made an effort in the past couple of years to have contributions and expenditures on their website, and those are better. There's not an easy, quick, you know, download to Excel sheet button, but you know, if you know your way around a little bit, you can get to that kind of thing. This is, I think, especially in terms of the disclosure requirements, it is probably a step in the right direction, and it has gotten nothing but. Nothing but plaudits. The other thing that has been, you know, pretty popular is the idea of the tax credit. So they included a provision that would allow individuals to claim $50 on their tax returns and $100 for joint filers, and this would apply to your local taxes, right? But it would sort of encourage small time political donations. I think the drafters are hoping. Would encourage people to make contributions to political candidates that they favor.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Columbus City Council last night approved new campaign finance reform package that included spending limits or donor limits of about $12,707. It'll be adjusted for inflation every 2 years, I guess, just like the state, which is what they modeled that after. It was unanimous, right?
I could not say, but it wouldn't surprise me.
And Nick Evans, WSU reporter, has been covering the issue. He's my guest right now. The limit of the $12,707.79, I guess, is what it is at right now, does bother a lot of people. They say that they based it on what the state does. How does it compare with what other big cities do?
So in Cleveland, I believe the campaign limit is $5,000 for individuals, $7,500 for groups. Cincinnati, little over 1,000 for individuals, 2,700 for groups, and the 2,700 is almost certainly pulled from the federal campaign contribution limit. That's been one of the things that has come up a lot, is that, you know, if somebody runs for House, like the for Congress, or they run for Senate, U.S. Senate, individuals can't give more than $2,700. And this limit as it is right now—
For the campaign period.
Right. Yeah. And so this limit as it is right now, people could give more than $10,000 more than that for the person running for, you know, city auditor or, you know, city attorney.
Yeah, this applies to all the city council seats, mayor, city auditor, city attorney.
Right.
If you have a question or comment, what do you think about this? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Are you relieved that there finally are some campaign finance regulations in place for the city of Columbus? Do you agree with others, some others, that the limit is too high? Let us know. Why? So the timing of this is they had to get it passed now in order to have it go into effect for the upcoming municipal elections.
Right. I didn't like map out like on a calendar day by day like exactly when that needed to be done. But when I spoke with Council Member Stinziano, he basically told me, you know, if we want to have this in place, if we want to have this squared away in time, we pretty much need to get this measure passed by the end of January.
But that's coming up in May. Why not just, I mean, I guess, did anyone ask him whether or not just give it a whole year and pass it by May? When what difference does it make to have it in place for the May elections?
For this election?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think they just want to have it in place. Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Campaign literature,
yeah,
I guess,
exactly,
is what we're talking about.
I mean, the mayor has already begun his campaign. Like had his first event, I think it was either last week or it's early this week. But
fundraising event.
Yeah. So I think the idea is like, let's, you know, get this squared away so that, you know, people know what they are, what's in store for them, you know, as they begin their campaign. And, you know, I'm sympathetic to that argument.
We know what other cities based their numbers on?
I think if you ask Councilmember Stinziano,
well, he says it's arbitrary.
Right.
But
I think that probably it is to a certain extent arbitrary. At the same time, though, you do see 2,700 come up on a fairly regular basis.
The federal limit.
Yeah.
For the groups.
So, I mean, I think that the federal limit is probably what a lot of people look to, and sometimes it goes higher, sometimes it goes lower. The other big argument here for why set a higher limit is the idea that, you know, if you have a high limit, then the money will flow to the candidate, and the candidate can control their message, their campaign, the sort of they can set the terms of debate, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a lower limit, it may allow money to flow to outside groups that can, you know, pull the campaign in different directions.
And has that been an issue?
I mean, it's been an issue in you know,
other cities,
in federal campaigns, right?
Of course.
I don't know that that's necessarily been a huge issue at city levels. Probably there's some state campaigns where outside money becomes an issue, but I don't know that it's necessarily a big problem yet. It's possible. But I don't think that that's been quite the boogeyman that it's been made out to be.
Was this a campaign promise of the mayor?
I was not here.
I can't remember.
I think that, you know, in terms of, you know, the sort of administration that Mayor Ginther is trying to lay out, it seems right in line with the sort of you know, package of things that he'd like to present. I think that there are probably a lot of folks that are paying attention that are a little upset with where that limit is. The other thing that we haven't mentioned too, that's sort of devious and sneaky here, is that the limit applies annually, rather than by campaign period.
Right. Now, unlike state limits.
Right. So when you mentioned that it applies to all the city officials, all those city officials serve for 4 years, right? And so under this proposal, they could receive the maximum contribution four times in a term, right? A state official, and they say they have modeled this on state limits. A state official is limited by campaign period. So they're allowed to raise up to the maximum before the primary, and they're allowed to raise up to the maximum between the primary election and the general election. So that's like, you know, a couple of months, right? So they, in effect, in a four-year term, have two times where they can raise the maximum, whereas at the city level, they have four times where they can raise the maximum.
So that's a lot more money. You reported that the big donor for Mayor Ginther. Ginther last period, I guess, or whatever you want to call it.
Ahead of the last election.
Frank Cass.
Right.
Who gave $50,000 in a matter of days.
Right.
This could just easily spread this out over the course of 4 years.
I mean, you could. You could. It's possible. At the same time, though, I mean, Frank Cass is one individual giving a lot of money. There's a whole lot of other people that give about something in the order of like about $10,000 on a fairly regular basis. So, I mean, a lot of those folks will continue, I would assume, to give at the same levels that they are. And I think that's probably the big argument among critics is that, you know,
this isn't going to change anything that much.
Right. I mean, the big sort of godfather type donations that come in right before an election, those aren't going to happen. Or, you know, they're going to be severely constrained. But a lot of the existing large ticket donations that city officials receive, those will still keep coming.
Nick Evans, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Anytime. Happy to do it.
Nick Evans, WOSU reporter. He's been covering the Columbus City Council. Last night they approved a new ordinance establishing campaign finance regulations for the city of Columbus for the first time. It was really the first big city in the state to – the last big city in the state, I should say, to enact any kind of regulations. The limits, however, the limit is $12,707.79, which is way higher than any other big city in the city in the state of Ohio. We're coming up. We're going to hear from City Council President Pro Tem Michael Stinziano, and he's been defending the ordinance, and we'll hear what he has to say. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus City Council voted last night to enact, for the first time in Columbus, campaign finance reforms. Together with Mayor Andrew Ginther, Columbus City Council proposed the campaign finance law that, among other things, caps individual and group campaign donations at just over $12,707. Coming up, we'll hear from Catherine Turser of Common Cause Ohio, which has opposed that limit and the contribution periods in the proposed, well, I should say, in the ordinance. Joining us now is Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Michael Stinziano. Welcome back.
Good morning.
You helped lead the effort to enact the campaign finance ordinance in Columbus, the last big city in Ohio to do so. What spurred council in this direction at this time?
So in my 3 years on council, it's been an ongoing part of the discussion, recognizing we don't have limits. What are the benefits of limits and what could be done? It's gone back and forth. Didn't really think there was going to be a window. But a court case that's going through the system really opened the door in terms of the dark money. And that was something that the administration and a couple of my colleagues really wanted to see what action could we take. And as we started looking down that disclosure of dark money piece, adding a limit came a component of putting together a complete package.
What was the court case that got you interested in the dark money issue?
It's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington versus Federal Elections Commission and Crossroads Grassroots Policy Strategies.
Okay.
And it's still going through.
That's the Koch brothers, right?
It is. And yeah. It's still going through the challenge. And okay. So there is a potential that if it goes before the court, Supreme Court, it could be ruled that we can't have further disclosure. But it really did open a window that allowed us to kind of further the conversation that had been going on both limits, what additional disclosure requirements could be part of. And I know in the previous segment you talked about different components of the legislation. Mm-hmm. That all kind of came together in one package.
Yeah, the disclosure has been lauded pretty roundly, the transparency aspect of this legislation.
Our goal has always been transparency. We take a lot of pride that our campaign finance, when the new administration came in, with somewhat the current council, although it continues to evolve, really sought to have more disclosure than what they have at the state and what we see in other cities across Ohio. A lot of the feedback did end up focusing on that campaign finance limit, which mm-hmm. I think is a small part of the bigger package. As Catherine Turser, who will be on next segment, mm-hmm. I talked about, there is a lot of good things in here. We had members that thought, no problem happening. Why do we need to put in a limit? Other members that said, absolutely, we need a limit. It's best practice. Well, so that was part of the evolving conversations. Having been at the State House prior to being on council, mm-hmm. I had a familiarity with that limit, that's kind of where we landed as consensus.
We know you base the cap on current state limits, which are adjusted every 2 years for inflation. That's why that weird, $12,707.79. But why follow the state model instead of other big cities? I get your impulse as a former state lawmaker, but why?
So part of what we've heard
is a state legislative seat. These
correct.
Are
we're actually larger than state rep seats.
Yeah.
And that's been part of the discussion. City council, our current council governance system, we're all at large representing over 850,000 residents.
Of course, a very
residents.
Small city council for the size city it is,
well,
but that's another discussion.
Also,
another
voters
day.
Are working to change
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of part of the discussion. And it's something that came up with some of the folks that spoke in concern. It's a high limit. Don't compare it to the state. But when we're looking at the campaign, I mean, you've got to be citywide. And so when I hear, Cincinnati, Cleveland are smaller, it's not apples to apples. And that was something we really struggled with throughout this process.
You're saying because they're smaller city populations?
Smaller city populations and districts or the way they're structured.
Uh-huh.
When I'm out campaigning for a council seat, I need to be across the entire city. And so, again, am I going to get a lot of support at that threshold? Probably not. Never have gotten it while at the city. Had opportunities at the state. Unfortunately, that became the focus. Really, the dark money, the disclosure, continuing our commitment and making it a more transparent and open process is something that was the motivation, opened the window, and the limit became, again, part of the package.
Well, so was the limit just an afterthought then, that it was just like, just put in a limit, the state limit exceeds what most of us, most of the big contributions range in around the $10,000 level. It won't change anything ultimately.
It's a change to the nothing we have now. Currently, there are no campaign finance limits in the city of Columbus. So mm-hmm. it wasn't an afterthought. The struggle was, where could we get consensus if we're going to have a number? Some of the discussion was, just take out the limit. We'll stick to what we have now. The members who don't feel we have a problem, we're going to go with that. The folks that wanted a lower one, the concern is when you have lower amounts, and one number that kept coming up was the federal level, you see a lot more dark money.
The $2,700
right,
dollar level.
A lot more independent expenditures, a lot of groups that aren't disclosing but trying to have an influence. We haven't had that experience in Columbus,
right.
And the concern was if we went lower, and we've seen it in other cities, you see outside PACs, outside independent expenditures have a larger influence.
In other cities in Ohio?
In Ohio and in across the country.
What sort of outreach was done with good government groups like Common Cause Ohio?
So the administration had a conversation, discussion with them. My door's always open. So had conversations as we had two public hearings, had feedback ongoing. In terms of what seat did they have at the table in terms of the development, that would be a better conversation with the administration and some of our LRO staff.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And you can ask Catherine. But talked with her a little bit and – we had a very open process. I think some people were concerned. You know, we gave feedback. Nothing changed, but it wasn't that we weren't listening. It has been something we struggled, not just while this proposal was pending in November, December, and ultimately to last night, but something in the past 3 years that we've really had lots of conversations of, is there a need for a limit? What would be best practice? We made substantial changes when we came in with
but
the new administration.
But not public conversations. It was kind of a fast process, given the gravity of the issue.
Depends how you do. I mean, conversations have been ongoing.
I've been talking about campaign finance for 30 years. But enacting this it's at the city government level within 3 months is pretty speedy.
So the part of the time was we wanted, and as the manager, we wanted something in place for this year's municipal election. That meant we needed 30 days before kind of the March 1st deadline to get in the different components in place. So that did push us a little bit. So it did move.
So they'll have to report everything from this past year?
Going forward will be the report.
Well, how much
period.
Difference does that make in the municipal races?
Well, I mean, there's fundraisers coming up in the coming weeks.
Okay.
Those will be required to be reported for this cycle.
Okay.
And that was the motivation. I mean, we could have continued to waited, had additional hearings, additional discussions. My fear, and a couple other folks, was then nothing would get done.
Because there wouldn't be the pressure of the election coming up.
Correct.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the vote last night in Columbus City Council to enact legislation that for the first time has campaign finance regulations and rules in place. It was agreed with it was endorsed by the administration of Columbus Mayor Andrew Ginther. My guest right now, Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Michael Stinziano. He's been leading the charge on this legislation. And by the way, congratulations on your win in county government. You'll be leaving. This doesn't affect you personally.
It does not. February 22nd will be my last day on council, and look forward to taking office as the future Franklin County Auditor on March 11th.
Are there campaign finance limits and rules and regulations at the county level?
There are not.
Interesting. Would the limit likewise be adjusted for inflation every 2 years as it is at the state level?
It's drafted to model the state number. So it actually started at 10,000 at the state and, with the inflation has continued that increase. So conceptually it would, but I do think last night in passing the ordinance, getting it in place is part of moving the conversation forward. Mike Curtin wrote a great article talking about how this continues to evolve, mm-hmm. and this is a step forward. I don't think anyone looked at the ordinance as the end-all be-all of the conversation, both watching the court case with dark money, mm-hmm. But also what does the impact of now having a limit where we've never had one before, how does that play out, and what does that do towards our elections or impact that it has for engagement?
If you have a question or comment for Michael Stinziano, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. At the state level, the limit applies to campaign periods, the time before a primary election and the time between primary and general election. For the city, it does not follow that pattern. The limit is annual, and therefore, because city officials serve 4-year terms, they have a max contribution opportunity 4 times that of the state, or twice as much often as a state. A state official only has 2 chances. So why the departure from the state plan, pattern?
The goal is to make the reporting easier and more transparent. When you do it per election, it turns into kind of a hodgepodge of when was the contribution given, what's going on, primary, no primary. Doing it annual, the goal was just to make it more transparent. You know, when the cycle starts, when the cycle ends every year.
But it also increases the opportunity to raise money.
Potentially. The money, to some extent, feels like it's going to be there if people are going to pursue it. I mean, one of the fascinating things in the discussion was that this was the goal, that we're just trying to hide the ball. You get some elected officials very committed to fundraising. That's their focus. You have other members that aren't. That's not just a Columbus, Ohio, but you can look to other cities where they have limits. In Cleveland, Cincinnati, you have proficient, prolific fundraisers, and it's really just their approach. So, you know, what's important at the end of the day is the transparency. When and if you're going to be continuing to do it, it's going to be open and annual, and we'll see kind of the impact that could have.
How is it easier? I'm not sure I understand, because with you actually only you have actually fewer reporting times at the state level.
Depends how you look at the report and when they're raising those dollars. And so by doing it annually, a little more set in stone what that reporting period is going to be. And that was part of the discussion.
Uh-huh.
Is one necessarily going to be better than the other? Don't know. Will it have a bigger impact? We'll see it play out. But felt when you're doing it per election, it confused people in some of how the reporting occurs and when to capture or when the kind of limit could be reached, although I don't think we're going to see a lot of people ever reaching the limit.
Anna in Columbus, you're on the air with Columbus City Council President Pro Tem Michael Stanziano. Hi, Anna.
Hey. Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've heard you guys reference dark money. I've read about it, and I've heard a lot of references about dark money, but can you be specific and talk about what dark money is? And why, for example, that Koch Brothers lawsuit is the word dark money is used with that versus other things that are happening. Just explain it.
Okay. Yeah. Michael Stanziano, you want to take a
So shot? Dark money is essentially money that is going into support of a candidate or a campaign issue that isn't being disclosed.
It's outside of the campaign.
Correct. But after the Citizens United court case, mm-hmm. They ruled that you don't have to always disclose who those donors are. The pending lawsuit was an action to say, yes, we want to see disclosure. We want to know who these individuals are. And so the ordinance really pursues that if you take any action to influence a ballot issue, a campaign issue, a candidate, you have a requirement to disclose that.
Right. So any outside groups that start a campaign outside of a candidate's campaign, they have to disclose.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Anna, does that make sense? Anna, does that make sense? I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. Well, the point is, go ahead, Mike.
But that's one thing people have asked about is they hear the term dark money. What is that referencing? And it's really making sure where there's situations where people think they're going to be able to influence and not disclose. Disclosure has always been the key for any candidate at the different levels of government I've been involved in. That accountability is what's most important, letting folks know these are the people supporting me or these are the people trying to influence a race, a ballot issue. There were some concerns in recent school issues around Central Ohio that outside groups were trying to kind of play those games and put money in but not disclose who those donors are. That's something in a standard that we didn't think was appropriate for the city of Columbus, and we, again, really want to shine light where that dark money has been able to, unfortunately, be common practice.
Right. All right. So we see mostly at the national level these dark money campaigns. And the idea is that they can do these campaigns. They're not in coordination with the candidates' campaigns. Therefore, they don't have to disclose who they are.
Correct. They'll disclose their name, but they won't disclose who are the people behind it. Is it one person funding the whole thing? Is there really a coalition? Is it in-state, out-of-state, in-city, out-of-city? Who are those individuals? And that's something that when you talk to voters, they do want to know who are backing the issues. Reporters do a really good job of trying to track that down. But post-Citizen United, it's been tougher and tougher.
Which was the United States Supreme Court decision from some years ago now. You've said that the contribution caps used in other cities are arbitrary and that the lower they go, the better their chances for that outside dark money to flood into a race. What's your evidence for the idea that they're arbitrary? What do you know about how Cincinnati and Cleveland came to those lower limits?
So it's been more the national search. And talked to Seattle, someone at Seattle's council yesterday, and that conversation focused on a little different angle, but they did talk about that they do see proliferation of independent expenditures in their council races. In Austin,
As far as the arbitrary limits, calling them arbitrary.
In the sense of I'm not sure what the right number is, where the participation is. Other cities have gone with a voucher to try and, again, remove money out of politics. NPR did a great story of kind of watching that play out in Seattle. I've never been able to really attribute this is the sweet spot. This is the right number for either greater transportation or more engagement. Folks that feel money is trying to buy influence has not been my experience, but that's always the concern when people are going out and campaigning. I do, you know, the hard line between what you need for a campaign versus actually policymaking. I've never seen that line cross, but I recognize that there's that perception out there.
Of political science, you're aware that it has been.
Depending on that's perception. I mean, when organizations or an individual supports my campaign, there's never been a ask of, and this is what I want.
In your personal experience.
In my personal experience.
Right.
And the people that kind of engage, build the relationships, that's where the policy really occurs. As we were talking about in one of the hearings, you know, I had one resident, very supportive, gave $5 every month. And that $5 meant a lot to him, but he really, really liked me. And that's why he continued to do that. He'd show up to my community hours. He'd call me up and engage, and we'd work on issues. And it had nothing to do with how much he was donating. It was just that engagement one-on-one with myself on a particular issue.
And you're saying that in your conversations with Seattle City Council members that they had lower limits and that it did affect, or that there was an increase.
So the discussion I had, it was a staffer in Seattle, was who does their threshold apply to? It's very broad. It doesn't kind of list out groups, and so it applies to everyone. But then the conversation turned to what role does political parties have? Do they put out a sample ballot? Do they try and influence a certain slate of candidates or not? And if they do, they do it through independent expenditure. Yes, they can donate the $500 to the candidate, but they clearly, from what I heard, was that they will continue to participate and engage, but do it outside the scope of the campaign finance.
Okay, well, Michael Stinziano, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure.
Michael Stinziano, he's Columbus City Council President Pro Tem. He led the charge on the vote last night in City Council to enact, for the first time, campaign finance disclosure laws and limits for the City of Columbus. Coming up, we're going to hear from Catherine Tercer of Common Cause Ohio. It has is critical of the limits and of the periods of reporting. Otherwise, likes a lot about the new laws. So we'll talk about that coming up. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus City Council last night approved a raft of, for the first time, campaign finance regulations for the City of Columbus, including a cap on individual and group campaign donations to just over $12,707. That's a number set forth by state law for the Ohio General Assembly, and it's updated or increases based on the inflation. Thank you very much. My guest is Executive Director of Common Cause Ohio, Catherine Tercer. We just heard from the Columbus City Council President Pro Tem, Michael Stinziano. He's been leading the charge for that proposal. Welcome back to the show, Catherine.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate being here.
Thanks for your help. Let's start with the contribution gap. A cap, I should say. That is, there's two issues. You have the contribution cap is too high, and also the periods that the cap applies to are too short. Okay, so the cap, $12,770, it's something that Michael Stinziano felt comfortable doing because it's a big city and the state already had that in place.
I think the place to start is, why do you want a campaign contribution limit? And the reason you want to have a campaign contribution limit is to root out quid pro quo. That, in fact, we want to make sure that we are limiting those contributions to root out corruption. It is all about the notion of, we don't want people buying influence. So, for example, we don't want developers giving really large checks and getting something specific from the city. And so it can be very uncomfortable to talk about those contribution limits, especially as a city council person, to say, hey, this is about quid pro quo and we're putting these limits in
because
place.
Because that assumes that that is the case then.
That's absolutely right. You know, I always say, you know, the thing is, if you are an honorable person, that's great, but it's very helpful to have some guardrails. That, in fact, you can't assume that everybody who is elected to office is actually going to act in the same fashion that you are, and that it's important actually to think about corruption and to think about how these contributions actually can influence policy making and decisions. And I think very few of us are naive enough to think what is essentially $13,000 per year is the kind of limit that would not influence somebody. It's a very large amount.
Michael Stinziano said that the larger the amount, the less apt people are to then go dark money route.
So when we talk about dark money, we're talking about those independent expenditures.
Right.
And so it is a worthy goal to say we want the limits to be high enough that we keep the campaign system as much as possible under the candidate's control. That in some ways there's something really sad about having a campaign and having the candidates not be able to control what's being talked about and to have as much influence on what the debate is about and to rely on folks around them. Because a lot of times interest groups come in and they're all of a sudden it's some crazy issue that has nothing to do with the city of Columbus, for example. So it's worth thinking about having them high enough. But this is ludicrous. The contribution limit to the mayor of New York City is $5,000. That's New York City. So the whole notion of saying, oh, we're a larger city than Cleveland. We're a larger city than Cincinnati that has low limits. Well, that's true. But we're certainly smaller than New York City.
Is it offset in your mind at all the transparency components of this new law?
So I looked at this as being really – I went last night and I testified and I watched them vote. And it was sad because, of course, they made a remarkable change when it came to disclosure of dollars and transparency of dollars. And they also set up kind of an auditing system and they set up, you know, a mechanism. You know, you need some mechanism to make sure that folks are accountable to, you know, the disclosure pieces and to the campaign contribution limits. So they did some really good things. Oh, they also did this really cool thing where they established a tax credit for people that make a campaign contribution.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's really good because, of course, anything that encourages small donations, and that's kind of like what you think of as a public financing, very small donation thing, you know, that's really good. But it's hard to have a conversation about how wonderful that part is without talking. You know, you say, okay, so you address dark money.
Is the tax credit for just for small donations?
Yes. It's, you know, it's basically $50 per individual, $100 per couple. And as for the tax, people that would be filing together. The thing to remember as we think about this, yes, it addressed dark money. Yes, it addressed transparency. It didn't address big money. It didn't address the worry that people have about corruption. It didn't address that quid pro quo.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the new city law that limits campaign contributions to $12,707.79 to be updated for inflation every 2 years, just as it is in the state, which is what they base that number on. There are also lots of disclosure rules in it that have been enacted. And also, as my guest, Catherine Tercer of Kamikaze, Ohio, mentioned, a tax credit for smaller donations. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Kathleen in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. Our TV is on in the other room. Can you hear me okay, though?
Yep, you're fine.
Good. All right. Well, what I want to say is that we've had proposals that the city be based on a ward system and that council people be elected within wards. And if we were to break down into wards and people ran just in a ward, then we would take away the argument that, in fact, we are creating a campaign limit that has to spread across to 800 and some thousand people. And I think I know that that was not part of the discussion last night. I know that we have a new system that's going to go into effect at some point that will break us down into wards partially, but people won't campaign at the ward level.
No.
They'll still have to be elected citywide.
Catherine Tercer, is that?
So what will happen is it's this unusual thing where people will be in wards, but they will represent the entire city. So it's still, so candidates would still be campaigning across the whole city. I think one of the things that I didn't say that I think is important as we talk about, this limit and that limit, is to think about, the power and promise of representative democracy, that we know there's something deeply wrong right now. And we know that we want to have our elected officials be accountable to us. And the argument that if you have a super high limit, then the money is, there's not going to be dark money, is not right. And the reason I know that's not right is that, in fact, there were dark money attacks, especially during the primary, for at the state level. And the thing to think about is, yes, you can make a limit high enough that you're encouraging donations to candidates rather than to independent expenditures. But you can have a super high limit like the state does, and you still are going to have some dark money. And I still go back to the notion of if you do this per year rather than per election cycle, then the limit that they came up with is actually higher than the state limit.
Kathleen, thanks for that call. We have an email from Adam who writes, I'm glad to see the new disclosure rules, but worried about the language around limits. Does this limit apply to all individuals and groups, or are some groups, for example, political parties, exempt from the limit? If there's a disparity, why? I don't think that they're exempt.
So the thing that is interesting is that there are limits on individuals and PACs that are in this.
Yeah.
But they did not establish a limit on parties. There's no limitation on parties.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So okay. So the thing that is, I mean, it's just interesting to think about. They
but
didn't,
that's the same as state law, right?
So there are limits on how much can be given to
candidates from the party.
There are for the state level. And so, yes, they're much higher than you might, they're six-figure numbers. They're large numbers.
Yeah.
But there are some limitations. And one of the reasons there how those kind of limitations when it comes to the party has to do with the notion of parties' jobs are to help their people get elected, but people can become too beholden to those political parties. And so that's the reason why there is a limit there at the state level. And it really was not considered in this proposal that just passed last night.
Mike Stinziano said that this is the start of the conversation, that getting this into law gets it established before the next municipal election cycle, which is started basically. It doesn't reflect any contributions in the past. It's only going forward from here on out. So it's not necessarily going to affect this campaign cycle, but it will be something to put on their campaign literature.
I think it's important to think about what it is that we want as a city. And of course, there are cities that are doing some really interesting things, like Seattle that does these democracy vouchers, which is basically a public financing where, you know, voters are, you know, people that are citizens of Seattle are able to apply for certificates that are basically equal to $100. And they break them down into $25 a piece. And you can give them then to candidates, and the candidates redeem them for some money from the city. And it's a way to make those candidates more beholden to, you know, to the city, more beholden to individual donors and not, you know, of the community rather than wealthy interests. And so, you know, when we think about the option, there are lots of different options and there are lots of different things that we could be talking about. It makes me glad that they see this as a beginning. What I struggle with is that there were 32 people that testified and when they had hearings on this. And of those 32, 30 of them talked about how the campaign contribution limits were too high. Some of them identified specific things that they were unhappy with. They identified, for example, you know, money spent on the arena, money that was spent that they did not believe that the voters supported and that they knew that developers did. And so they identified real specific examples where maybe it wasn't quid pro quo, but it certainly gave that appearance. And I know it's really difficult as the decision makers to say, oh, we really, you know, we want to rein ourselves in or we want to make the guardrails really clear. But I am really hopeful that as they go forward, they do this. I do think, you know, it's good to have these rules in place before we get into the election. But we have not actually had dark money problems at the city level.
Right.
What we have had problems, perhaps, you know, has to do with the undue influence of developers.
And that, of course, is in the eye of the beholder. And of course, the other issue is the campaign terms. I mean, it's on an annual basis versus a biannual basis, like it is in state government or camp. I should say during the campaign cycles, it's an annual versus a campaign cycle disclosure. Michael Cinziano said that that's to make things easier, less complicated for the campaigns.
So I'm all about
more transparent,
right,
as well.
Well, I think there's something about making sure that things are simplified. But let's think about making the contribution limits tied to the calendar and to being annual suggests that the contributions are not actually related to an election. And I often think, you know, like this is a good example. State government is just getting started. They're going to go into this budget cycle. People start making contributions to, you know, the person who's going to be the Speaker of the House and, you know, decision makers and leaders and just in the next few months. Those contributions that are so far away from the actual election are the most tied with wanting the ear of a legislator. And so when we start to think about, well, the reason they're tied to an election is because, in fact, they should be tied to an election, not tied to policymaking.
And you're saying that when it's given this carte blanche per year, it affects policymaking, or at least
it could. And it also looks odd because you could simplify this and still have it by election cycle. By doing it per calendar year, it's more money. So the thing is, you could actually require more reporting. You could require more reporting, which is a different thing.
Yeah. There's also different reporting requirements pre and post general.
Yes.
That this doesn't address.
That's correct. But state law has what's called contribution. Basically, you need to do your contributions and your expenditure reports on annual, semi-annual, if it's an off year, you're not running for office. And then there's like the pre-primary, post-primary, pre-general, post-general. That would be the best way to understand how the filings are right now.
Catherine Turser, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Well, we should all be following the money. So I'll encourage you all to get on the internet and do a little research.
Catherine Turser is executive director of Common Cause Ohio, who opposes the campaign finance limits, supports a lot of the other aspects, though, of the new campaign finance code for the city of Columbus. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.